Hi, everybody. Welcome to Who Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, author spotlight edition. And on this spotlight edition, I am joined by Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
And we are given the immense pleasure of chatting with author LJ Andrews. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
We are good. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, LJ Andrews is a USA Today bestselling author of fantasy romance. She mystically brings to life worlds of dark Nordic and Viking myths bound by conflicts that bring together impassioned heroes and heroines. In her non-author moment, she is courageously corralling her four children to the myriad of life activities that involves, along with spending time with her favorite hero, her husband. Add two high-maintenance dogs and a sassy conure to the mix, and that sums it up. LJ Andrews thrives spending time in the Rocky Mountains where she lives in Utah. So before we talk Broken Souls and Bones, let's get to know you a little bit.
Sounds
so
good.
What initially drew you to the romance genre as an author?
Oh, I've always loved romance as a kid, from the kid to the get-go. Everything, if it doesn't have, I mean, I can read thrillers and things like that, but I've always been drawn to like a romance subplot. Even I'm always rooting for certain people, and even in shows, I can remember I would just binge watch as like a tween and a teen the 90s like rom-coms all the time. I was just obsessed with it. So romance, we've decided, I've flatly said that I need to have at least a subplot in my books. I don't know, I love it. It makes it feel real to me, gives me people to cheer for.
So do you have a gateway book that got you really into romance?
I'm trying to think. I used to read historical as a kid a lot.
Okay.
So no, I like those ones weren't, I wouldn't say. I don't know. I'm trying to think. Probably, oh, actually I do remember Ella Enchanted. Do you remember that book?
That's a good
read
one.
That as a kid and I loved it.
See,
So
mine was Logan Likes Marianne.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the OG, like Babysitter Club, romance life. And I mean, then it went from there.
Yep. It just keeps spiraling. And, you know, I always saw like my grandma, she used to read like the full on Harlequins, you know, the bodice rippers on the front. And I was like, what's that, grandma? So, you know.
Yeah. But
you
and
started
I were the
reading
ones
them
like sneaking and reading those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Way sooner than we were supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like I always say, like my mom got like the boxes in the mail of like the six books every month, and I would just take one and like hide in my bedroom and read them. And I read very fast, so I would read like a whole book in a day. And but she didn't, she probably knew that I was reading them, but she didn't say no. So
yeah,
I mean, I figure why not?
Yeah,
they're laying around the house.
There
they're
you
free
go.
to read. So what made you choose romanticity?
Well, I've always been a fantasy reader too. So my main genres as a kid, I started like with the Little America books or whatever they were called. I don't know. Dear America. That's what it is. So when I say historical, that's what I used to read.
Yeah.
And then I went to Narnia, like a lot of kids in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
And so I loved the fantasy element of it, but I always was really drawn to fantasy. So like when I started having kids, we would be reading Fablehaven and Brandon Sanderson and all this stuff. But then like when I started reading like Holly Black and all these other authors, I was just like, oh, so we can have a romance book with our fantasy. Let's do this. So
yeah,
I love it. It just became my favorite genre. I do love contemporary romance as well. And so, but if I can write it and combine both of my loves, let's do it. So.
So what made you push publish that first time?
Oh, it was a long process. So I started writing my actual first grown-up book, I guess. You know, I wrote as like a kid all the time.
Yeah.
And but it was because I got really bad postpartum depression after my third child was born. And so I started writing. And then it took me about 3 years, and it was right before my fourth was born that I was like, you know, I spent all this time doing this. I had really studied about different publishing options, and I chose to go indie. And I just like, you got to do it. You just have to do it, or you'll never do it. And so it was just 3 years of work and convincing myself that this is what's the worst that could happen. I guess people hate it. And so, And then I just did. And I went and had a baby and kind of forgot about it for a few weeks. So
I mean, that'll happen.
yeah, I was like, I think went into labor like 6 days later. So I was like, well, that'll distract me for a while.
So, can you share any writing rituals or habits that help you stay focused and productive?
Well, I am not a focused person, but I have things that have helped me, I guess, try to stay focused.
You're
Every
preaching to
morning,
the
I have
choir
a,
with the focus.
I know, I'm like, I'm all over the place. But there are some things that I have learned to help because it's hard to work at home. It just is, and it's all right. But so I have a morning routine. I wake up about the same time every day, even on weekends. So I'm a morning person. So I'm an early riser. And then I always go for a walk with music, and it just whatever inspires you is what I always tell people to start with. Music inspires me, so I like to go clear my head and like kind of open up for any what I'm writing, like chapter wise, what's going to happen. Like I see it like a movie for me. And then I also am a big meditator, so I like to write down my goals every single morning. I have notebooks of just the same thing, like over and over again. But I do that, and then I get started on my day, whether it's just like back with my family, and then I can go back to work once they're all at school or whatever. So what I recommend to people is create habits that you do every day, and they can just be really small ones like that. Like I just wake up and I write stuff down and I listen to music, and so but it's also like a meditation for me personally. I have learned for someone who struggles with attention, and I am a hyper focuser, so I crunch time it, if that makes sense. I wait till the
It
deadline and
does.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I
Same.
absolutely hate it. It's
We
so
actually were just
unhealthy.
talking about
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. It's the worst. And because I don't eat, I don't sleep, I'm just stuck by a computer and trying to crunch. So I have been trying and it's been working. Well, time will tell if it continues to work. I forget what it's called. It's the 25 on and then like 5 off technique where you like focus for 25
Oh,
minutes,
yeah.
take a five. What is it? Pomodoro or something, I think is what it's called.
I know exactly what you're
And
talking about, but it
yeah,
sounds
it's
really
so,
good. It sounds like
yeah.
that is what it's called. Yes.
Yeah, we'll go with that. And that's actually really helped me with my last one. I just had to turn in. I still was pretty close to the deadline or at the deadline, but it like wasn't quite as intense
And
as it
you, but
has
you
been in the
felt
past.
better about it.
Yeah, like I got
That's good.
more stuff done. And for me, since a lot of my work is social media based, I have to put my phone in like a different room. I can't even like have it with me or else it's just such a distraction. So I do that. I've been working hard to do the 25 on, 5 off, like 3 times, then an hour and a half break or whatever, or an hour break. And then I keep my phone away from me. So that's been helping.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Is there something that current author you would tell past author you? This is one of the newer questions I've been asking authors, and it's really fascinating to see what people's answers are.
Yeah, mine would be first of all, do it and don't be so afraid about what other people think of you. Write what you want from the beginning is the first thing I'd tell myself because I was very afraid of judgment with spice specifically. So my first ones were very, very no spice, very, very closed door, not even closed door. They kissed. And so, but I wanted to write spice because I was a spicy reader, but I was too afraid of people. And so I would be like, just screw it. Do what you want to do you, and you'll find people who love it. No matter what, even if you write closed door, you'll find people who love it. So,
So,
and then, oh, sorry, go ahead.
no, go ahead.
Oh, and then the second thing would be like, make sure I understood my market, like the genres better. my first books were very mishmash. They didn't really fit anywhere. They were like sci-fi, romantic-y, thriller. So, yeah, I would just study the market a little bit better.
I don't know, sometimes those mishmash bar like books,
Sometimes.
they really
Yeah.
like hit everything that you
I had a
need.
solid 50 readers that loved them. So, yeah.
Hey,
That
that is
was,
better
they
than
loved it.
zero.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. There's a market for everything and there's a market for everybody. Like we like to say on the podcast, like there is a book for everybody, but not everybody for every book.
Yep. It's true. That's what I'm saying. Like, just what's the worst? Like I said, beginning when I first published my book, what's the worst that's going to happen? Someone hates it. Someone's gonna always hate something, you know? So,
So how do you approach creating like your worlds and your storytelling, but also your relatable characters?
Every author is going to be different. Mine starts with very foundational blocks. It's kind of become a joke now because I was on a panel once and they're like, how do you build your world? And I said, I literally start with what it smells like. And so I build like outward like that. So I have to build the setting first. And then, like with the characters, it kind of plays like an intro to a TV show in my head where it's just like a setting with a lot of faceless people. And then eventually, like somehow my brain weeds through it and like finds a character. And once I have like their basic personality traits of what I want them to be, I start building a personality profile. Like I actually use the personality tests and stuff like that that we people do all the time. And I start to get to know them that way. And that's how I build mine because it helps me if I know their personality and like their types and things like that, it helps me with their dialogue and it helps me with like their decision making. Does that make sense? You know, because it's like this would fit their trauma. Because then I'll start listing like what's their trauma, what's their backstory, what have they been through. I think that's important to understand because some people, especially if you write like morally gray people, they've usually been through some stuff. That's why they make the choices they do, and because you just want it to make sense. You don't. They can make stupid choices, in my opinion. I know a lot of people come after characters for making dumb choices, but I think characters can. We
Well,
all
but
make
I
dumb
mean,
choices.
that's the
Yeah.
thing. Like,
So,
we as people make dumb choices.
yeah. So
Okay. And
you just want those choices, in my opinion, to make sense as best you can. Like where you're like, I get it. I get why they did
the
that.
reason I love your books makes so much more sense to me now.
Oh,
Like, it's the
yeah.
smell for
I mean,
me.
not that it didn't make
The
sense to
smell.
begin with, but like that hook, like starting with the smell, like that is, I relate to that on like so many levels. And then just using like the personality tests, like it makes so much sense to me, like why your characters resonate so deeply with me
Oh,
now.
well, I love that.
So.
That's good. It's just how I build it. I have to kind of build small and then go out. I
Yeah.
don't know.
And it works really well because all of your characters, like the interconnections, the way your worlds work, it makes sense. Like it flows. Like I don't ever feel like I'm disconnected from anything I read from you.
Oh, I love that.
So
That makes that was like brightens my day. I'm so glad. That's the whole goal.
yeah.
So for your series, there's a lot going on in these books, and oftentimes like characters, like they go across multiple books for their relationship. Do you pants or do you plan out your series and books prior?
I
I
am
mean, the
both.
focus thing, like, I mean, I that kind of probably goes into it, but
Yeah, I'm pretty old school in my outlining. I write it down like just on a notebook, like ideas that I have. So that's my outline. It's not organized. But and then I kind of it always changes for sure. So I guess there's some pantsing in there as it comes, like things change. And so a direction I was going to go is completely different. It doesn't make sense anymore. Or characters appear where I'm like, where the heck did you come from? And they become something big, like they become a real big part of it. So I have a very loose outline usually when I start my
Like a
books.
basic idea where you want to go.
And then as I start writing, as you get to know, for me, as I build these personalities, I understand now, this many years into it, why authors say the characters take over, because they truly do. It's like, I can't be this many people, right? So they truly do become like their own person in your head, and they'll tell you as you're writing, but that doesn't make sense. Like, and so or like I'm bigger than you think I am, type thing. And so I guess I'm both. I definitely am totally open to shifting. Sometimes it's super annoying when you have to delete 30,000 words, but you know, it usually turns out I follow my gut. So.
Feel like it's a rite of passage as an author to like write 50,000 words and then start over again.
And start. Oh, I've
Right?
done it so many times.
Because I don't think I have talked to one who hasn't said, like, I've deleted giant chunks or I've gotten halfway through a book and then I start over because I hate the
Oh,
direction it's going.
yeah, it doesn't feel right. And I don't know about other authors, but me, I will get stuck. I can't move past it until I figure out what's wrong. And that's where you just have to kind of trust your gut and your characters and be like, this is what's happening, and you know it, and you got to go change it. So.
All right, so let's get into Broken Souls and Bones. It is book one in the Stonegate series. It released April 29th, 2025. Subgenres are fantasy romance slash romanticy. It's enemies to lovers forbidden, a non-verbal male main character. He's also morally gray. Hidden identity, touch her and die vibes, found family, slow burn, and unique magics, which I definitely want to talk about that.
Yes.
So I'm going to kind of pass the torch to Amanda because this is her bread and butter, and
Okay.
I am here to ask questions, but this was all her.
She's here to reel me in, basically, is
I mean,
what she
I'm not
means.
going to reel her in. I'm just going to let her go, but she has
I love
all the questions.
I love it.
So I will start saying that I found you last year with the Everking.
Oh, yeah.
I like obsessed. Like I was just every episode we had last year, they're like, oh, what are you reading? What are you loving? And I was like, the Everseas. And then I had to go back to, and started, probably like a third, two thirds of the way through the Broken Kingdoms.
Oh, good. So
And
you got
then
the
I
moms
even
and
went,
dads.
yeah. And then I even went back and I did all of the Dragon Mage books. I
Oh,
just
so those are
finished.
my old LJ books.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I needed to see this too, because I like the dragons. That was a lot of fun. So I'm slightly obsessed with your
Well, thank
books.
you.
So when this one came out, I was really excited because I was like, oh, this is a whole new world. But you still have, it's still kind of like the Viking like based mythology. So I was really curious, like, how did you approach making this one different from like the Broken Kingdoms and the Everseas?
Well, and that's so my theme, kind of like I guess you could call it a brand, is I probably will have a lot of Norse mythology in my books, just because we are Scandinavian, and I grew up on those myths, and so I love it. But I wanted to make it like, you're right, I was nervous. I'm like, I don't want it to make the same because it is a separate world, unless I want to open a portal, I guess,
Hey, you could
join
always
together.
do that.
Portals are always an option. Yeah. And so they didn't make them fae, which I
Yes.
have fae in my books. They are not fae. They are magic users, but and I wanted to make it a little bit more hearty with the Norse mythology, if that makes sense. And
Yeah.
so I did base it a lot on like their villages and their culture, and I dug deep into like trying to speak Norse, like Old Norse. So I even had like an Old Norse language learning book that I was using as I was writing it.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if I got like the sentence structure correct, but hopefully the words are semi-correct. Because and so like the song that they kind of sing in it, I don't know if that's actual Old Norse that I tried to write.
Oh, wow.
And so yeah, I just wanted it to feel like you just stepped back in time, was my goal, that you're like in a Viking village, and I wanted the magic to feel very like a Norse magic system might feel. So I guess that would be different. Like the Broken Kingdoms is a Norse-based world, but there's also a lot of, I hope, fairy and like fae stuff in it that's like from other mythologies that I put in those worlds too. So,
Yeah,
plus
I think
pirates.
I read the Everkings first, and I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, this is like Pirates of the Caribbean and Carnival Row. And then I went back to Broken Kingdoms and I was like, this is Vikings and Carnival Row. I was like,
Yeah,
I was so
exactly.
excited.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely get the difference.
But there's such an intricacy and care that you take when you created this world and the detail that you like gave us, like just with the way in which the characters, like the magic that they have and the way it like delves into like their worlds, like it's just so detailed.
Yeah, it's definitely my hardest, or I wouldn't say it, well, yeah, it was one of my harder magic systems I've ever created, because it is very much part of their culture and their lives, and so, and it's a little gruesome, so it was
Little bit.
hard. But
Where did you come
yeah.
up with the idea of like the melders and the bone crafters, like just the crafter side of it in general?
So that is the first block of the foundation of the whole book, actually, is I was going through my myth books. I've got a lot of mythology books, and I was like, hey, what, find some inspiration. What do you want to write about? Because I was like, I know I'm going to be doing a different series. And I found a few that I tried writing, and they never took off, like just based on different myths. But then I thought about the Old Norse, like Berserker warriors. I don't know if you know, but like, you know, they were like these feral, super powerful. And so I was like, okay, let's follow that train of thought. And I thought, what if there was a magic that actually created these warriors in this world? You know, they aren't just strong people. They are like actually created. And so that's where the magic system actually began, was with the melding. And so I wanted to have that one be the rare one, and then have some other magics that were a little bit not as intense. And then I came up with, I'm going to create this from a whole lore that they have, which is where their first king and like their lore on their craft. And I thought of the word craft. Gosh, the name for magic took forever, and it's such a simple word, but it took me forever to like come up with, because that's one thing I do like to do, is I like to have different names for magic in my worlds. I don't necessarily like to just say magic, so I always like to have a different word. So craft, I thought, since they actually are kind of like creating something with their powers, no matter what one they have, whether they have like, it's like bone magic, soul magic, and blood magic. And so I like the fact that it's a little bit more hands-on of magic system. So I like, they're kind of creating something, so they're crafting.
It
So
works. It
yeah,
definitely
does.
works.
That's where it started, was the idea of how could we make a myth about, or like a story about how berserkers are created.
I'm so fascinated by this.
I am too.
I can't, like, I'm,
I kind of want to
it's,
spend some time in your brain,
oh no, it's
yeah,
wild
which
there.
seems real creepy as I say it out loud, but just to
I'll have
like,
her going back after this and reading reading the other books.
yeah.
So let's talk about Rourke and Lyra, because how dare you try to usurp Eric and Livia from my brain. But because I love them, and I was like, oh, there's no way that I will love anyone more than them. And then I was like, oh, there is a way.
They were fun to write.
I
They were.
really like, you kind of have like this a little bit of the captor captive, like the situation going on in a couple of your books. And I really thought that this was interesting, like that she had been, kind of in hiding and they had to find her, and just how they're connected. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but the way that they're connected in the present and the past is just, I don't
Yeah,
know. Mm-hmm.
it was fun. And I, because I wanted to have some sort of connection, because again, the magic system kind of is very driven with like souls and things like that. So I wanted to have some connection to that. And so, yeah. And I also, since he doesn't speak verbally, I wanted to have a way that kind of connected them, so they didn't struggle the whole book with a language barrier.
And I
I
saw,
could
I think, on
go
threads that
ahead.
you're an occupational therapist, so did this
Yeah, I
like
didn't do because so he went through speech school too before he went and got his doctorate. And so they actually all helped me understand that a little bit more, because they work with nonverbal people sometimes. And so they kind of just gave me some pointers about, you know, there's usually someone who helps create like their communication that's a little bit more just with them. So that's where someone like Prince Thane comes into play. He's the one that helped Rourke develop his signs and things like that. And yeah, so they helped me a little bit. I try to be sensitive as I can be, you know, when we're dealing with that type of stuff. So.
Yeah, I thought that was really well done, and it created, like, Thane is like, Thane's probably gonna be my next obsession.
Yeah,
So
he's so fun. He was fun.
but yeah, I really like Rourke, how he's struggles with his duty versus, how much he is drawn to Lyra. I just, like, I'm trying not to spoil, so I'll let you, like, say whatever you want to tell me.
That kind of like works out in the first like meeting though. Like there, no, not the first meeting. That's not so great. But like when they first come face to face and she realizes who he is, like there's almost this like instant bind that creates between the two of them, but neither one of them are really aware of it, which I thought was an interesting way to do it, especially since like the soul magic is such a big part of this book.
But the fact that, like, as you read the book, like, she has such a quick understanding of like who he is and how he communicates, and the I thought that was just really well written, because they have that instant, like, emotional, like, touch, even though he nor her wanted it.
Yeah. I was actually really fun when she's picking up the language. So she studies his signs, you know, for a while, and she picks it up really fast. And I loved like all the scenes where he's super frustrated about it, but he's also like, but here, read some more. Like, I want to
Like,
talk to you. And
he's
so,
almost mad about it at
yeah.
first, but at the same time, he's like, I don't understand how she can be picking it up so easily, especially when she had never been exposed to it previously.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, there's little drops of people being like, oh, some people just understand each other type stuff, you know? So, and
And
it
you
was
could
just,
tell
I
he's
liked it. It
secretly
was
happy
fun.
about it. Yeah,
Yeah.
you can tell he's secretly happy about
I
it.
know.
He's
'Cause he's the
such a
one that like gave her
softy.
the book. He's like, you can read it if you want, but I'm also mad that you want to. So,
Just leave it in her room. Have,
yeah.
have Emmy drop it in her room. Oh, he
Yeah.
sent these for you, you know.
Yeah. So that was fun. And I hoped it. The goal was, I hope that it kind of created some tension between them, but also, you know, showed why they started liking each other. So.
I mean, it's like that whole push and pull where they don't want to be attracted to each other, but then, he becomes very protective of her, like it's his duty, but in the same breath, it's like, he's feeling things for her.
Well, but you also have, like, when you first, like, meet him, like, when they're going to, like, the village that she lives in, like, he already has so many, like, biases against, like, her kind, like the melder that she is, and so it's like he has to get over a lot of stuff. Stuff, I mean, I don't really want to, I can't say like
I know it's
anything.
hard.
So stuff is like the basic. He has a lot to get over.
A lot that happened. Like that was half the challenge and fun of writing Rorik's character is that he deconstructs basically his life in this book. So, and it was fun and a challenge to show like his anger switched to basically obsession. So through as he figures things out. So
Yeah, and I think, and then also too, Lyra is, she's learning about her craft because she's never used it. It's been something that she's been told is dangerous, and
well,
like
and
I
she
really
has.
like how she comes into that as well, and how it's different from the previous melder that the kingdom had, and you just know that she's special.
Well, but she also, like, she has such a blank pocket of time too that she's learning about and figuring out.
That was actually a layer of the book that came in later, like I said, as things change. The past stuff where they're fate they have like lost memories type thing. That was a that happened. Like it
Oh,
wasn't like
really?
that at the beginning. Yeah.
Oh, that
So
was
I think that
tough.
is a wonderful addition, because I don't
Yeah.
think her story arc would have been, not that it wouldn't have been as compelling, but I think having those lost memories, like, it just creates such a depth to her that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah, it was one of those things where you're like, something's missing, and that was it. So
I like
it
that
worked
a
out really
lot.
well.
Because
Yeah, oh, good.
I like,
I'm
honestly,
glad.
I mean, for me, I'm honestly like obsessed with them. So it's
Oh, good.
sorry. I'm
No, I
well,
loved them. They were fun.
but you have such a strong cast of side characters too. You have Thane, and you have Emmy, and you have Kyle or Kale,
Yeah,
however.
Kale. Yeah.
And so, like, you have these great characters that surround Rourke and Lyra, like, to help them, like, guide them, like, through all the, like, chaos essentially that they're going through.
Yes. I love side characters. Because every character I feel like is kind of a main character in their story. So side characters are just as important to me as main characters. And if you've read my books, which you have, they found family is one of my favorite tropes. Like I love to
I
create
love a
these
found family.
big, yeah, and like just like these characters are like, oh, you need me to bury a body? I'm there. Like, you know, like these ride or die friends that they aren't perfect, but like I love them. And I also really love to champion like female friendships
Yes.
in the book. So I really wanted like Emmy and Ursa and stuff like that. There are side characters in this book that are not always like Lyra's very skeptical of them at first, but then like they become just like your besties and Thane even. And I love like creating platonic female male pair like friendships too. Like Thane and Lyra have become good friends. So it's just, yeah, I can't stop myself, so I'm gonna keep doing it. So
Yeah,
I mean,
it
if it
really it
works, you keep
works.
it. Yeah.
So we I don't want to spoil too much of anything, but it
Oh, it's
does end on
hard.
a little bit of a cliffhanger, and I don't know if you can tell us what's coming next for
In
you.
the
Not
in
what in the book, but in like the
oh
next book. Not now it's happening, but like when the next book
yes.
is, if
The
we're allowed to
next
say
book
yet.
is written and
Oh,
turned
okay.
in. So
Yay.
it's there. It's in editing right now. And I think book two probably has I told this to some of my readers that I think it has the spiciest scene I've ever written.
Ooh.
Like from Everseas to here.
Oh,
I don't
wow.
know what happened. So
You just
it's
let it
gonna
all out.
yeah. It's gonna really show a lot more of probably Rorik's magic
Okay.
in book two and kind of get to know that, and you're gonna see more of the world. And everything's gonna be I hope it's like book one. I've had a lot of feedback from people where they're like, I see some of your twists coming, and then they're like,
Yes.
then I didn't, and then it changed again. So like book one has, I hope, a twist that people don't see coming. And I
Yes,
hope it's the same for book two,
there
where
was
you're just like,
one I saw, and there was one I saw coming in book one, in the first book, but there was another one that I was completely like
yeah.
flabbergasted, and I was like, oh wow, yes, I love it when that happens. So
Yeah, so there's foreshadowing for one, and that's I figured I'm like, I think people are gonna catch on to this one. And then there's one more thing that pops up, and then like the final page. And so I hope people like don't see some of it coming. So
yeah, no, I think you definitely accomplished that.
oh good.
So
Yeah, that's what most people do. Like I got the one and then I did not see the rest. So
yeah,
and
that's
I
pretty
hope
much
that
me.
happens like with there's a big reveal in book two. And I hope people don't see it coming at all. So
Is this going to be a duology, or are you allowed to say, or?
well, I don't have right now. It is like I gave in book two, unless something changes. Again, I'm fairly new to the traditional side of publishing, but I gave them a happily ever after in book two,
Okay.
and then but I did leave the world open if there's more that they
For
want.
other
So
people.
yes.
Yeah, because Amanda needs to
Yay.
know if
Yeah.
Thane will get a book.
Yeah.
That we'll see.
We'll see.
So
I mean, I hope so. So, but that's exciting. I'm very, very excited about book two. So
yeah, you'll Thane comes around in there. You'll see him. So
I'm a fan. Do you have current plans to go back to the Everseas?
oh yeah. So
Okay.
I'm actually writing book four right now.
Yay.
So the Everseas was picked up by the same publisher as Broken Souls and Bones, and so it's just going to be six books.
Oh, perfect. Okay. I was trying to
So
find it
there
and
will
I couldn't
be,
remember.
yeah. So the re-releases are happening in August, September, and October of this year. The ebooks of the first three are up now, but the physical books, they have bonus material and everything that's brand new that I haven't ever released before. So that's coming
Oh,
in the new
yay.
books, in the new hardbacks that are coming out. And then book four comes out next year. So, and then there will be two more after that.
Yay, I'm so excited. I love that world so
I
much.
do too. It felt like I was like, oh, welcome back. Like as I started like going back to Stolen Crown and stuff like that. So it
Was it
was.
easy just to kind of switch back, or did you have to kind of?
I have to go back into it. Like again, I start listening to the Pirates of the Caribbean soundtrack and stuff like that. So I can go back into it. But and then this one, I had to read some more of my Broken Kingdoms because we're in like some of that world before at the
Yeah.
beginning and stuff. So I'd be like, oh, I have to go back and make sure I'm consistent with my worlds. So,
Yes, because it's the parents for from the Everseas, and
yeah.
I think I'm like five or six on those books. So,
Okay.
yeah.
So six in that series starts to connect to the Everseas, and you'll see baby Eric.
Oh gosh. I love him. I think you did such a good job with those books, because I picked up, I started at the Everseas and I wasn't lost at all. Like
Oh, good.
there's a, I mean, you give enough explanation that I had no, like, I obviously like was interested in the families, but I was like, I had no problem picking up right there and then going back after I read The Mist Thief. So
That was the whole point of that too, is because I think 9 books can be intimidating to a lot of people. Even though they're divided by couples, it's not that long to get to happily ever after. But and so I wanted to do it where they could start either way. Just depends. So I'm glad to hear that, because that was
yes,
the
it worked out
point.
really well.
Well,
Do you have
thank
anything
you.
else coming
Oh,
up
no, go ahead.
that I was just going to say, and that's, do you have anything else coming up, or did we talk about all the things?
I think we talked about it.
Those are my
Okay.
current works in progress. So Book 2 and Broken Souls and Bones just finished, and then I'll be working on Book 4 in the Everseas for next year. So I don't know if I'll have an indie release in there somewhere next year. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see
Okay.
what life brings. But for sure, those 2 books will be coming out next year. And then like a lot of releases this year from the Everseas re-release and then Broken Souls and Bones. So
Perfect.
It's exciting things coming then. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and chatting with Amanda and I. We appreciate it so much.
Yes, we do.
Well, I appreciate you having me. That was a lot of fun. So thank you.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.